Let's Love do it.
Talk Radio.
African American Empowerment Saturday, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for the African American community and me. It's your main man Marvin Roan and the crew coming to you live. We got a great show for you today. Collective intersectionality in the African American community. Brother Rick Martin, Woody Lynch, Brother Booker Payton, one and much, much more. And as always, there is no better love, no greater love than for self and kind. No greater love than for self and kind. Say it again, Marvin. No greater love, no better love than for self and kind. Welcome to African American Empowerment Saturday. It is 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment for the African American community, specifically, directly for us, because we need it. Doing the work, right? And there's so much good work going on that we're going to continue to tell our stories and let the world know what we're doing and what we're all about and what we continue to explore as we continue to improve ourselves and move away from all the situations that we find ourselves in America and around the world. And so we have to improve ourselves, right? Here's a good part about the work. The work is going to be up to us to do, right? It's not, let's not make it about any other culture. Now, we got some things that we need to do in terms of dealing with others, right? But let's look at turning it to us and pointing the finger at us and what we can do as a collective, right, to find ways to resource ourselves to make our lives better, and particularly the lives of our children and the next generation that follows us, right? So we have to do a better job of trying to improve systems and ideas, right, that work for the collective along the way, but you got to start with yourself, just Brother Booker saying, being the one. And as we continue to develop a collective consciousness, right, where we begin to think about how we can unify and work together, the work is to work on ourselves individually, right, collectively, individual, family, and community. The only way you're going to improve community is improve the family system, and you have to understand that. And by improving the family system, you have to be able to work on one individual at a time in the family group, and that work must be maintained by a system, right? We have to have systems that unify people that would take us down the same road on the same track together doing similar things. We don't have to necessarily duplicate ourselves, but we have to have a process that's consistent to us and that works for us. So here at the NAAEA, we have a system called the Peace Process or the Peace Concept, where we're talking about critical components for developing our communities. One is being able to have a political agenda. I'm spelling out peace. We have to have a political agenda. We must understand the system of politics and how it works in this country, in the mainland of America, right, where we are. And we have to understand how to navigate those systems, the rules, the laws, right, and all of those policies that are in place that we must learn to effectively navigate and then navigate around where necessary, right? Understanding the justice system, the policing system, and the political systems and how they work. We got an election coming up, right, and we have to be astute and also tooling ourselves to understand how to use our vote in this system. You could be in the system but not of the system, but we can use the system to get us to the E, which is the next step, which is the economic piece, right, the economic development piece and portion of the process that says, well, understand capitalism, money management, how this money thing works. I'm telling you, if we get out of poverty and we understand how money works and then use those dollars to reinvest in ourselves, then we have it. We met a group from the Maasai tribe this week that talked about production from the beginning. From birth, they're teaching their kids how to produce, right? They're teaching their kids patience. They're teaching their children focus, and they're teaching their children discipline, right? And those are the things that they start with at an early age. And it's really interesting because I'm thinking, how do we begin to do those things where the attention is there, the focus is there, and then we begin to develop them in a process or a way in which they're producing from the beginning, that they're being trained and disciplined to be focused, right, in their action and their behaviors as a community collective member, right? Okay, let's move on. So then there's the A, which is the individual piece, right? You got to take care of your body, right? That's what Brother Rick does. Take care of your health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, right? Mental health, physical health, and emotional health, you got to push away from the table, right? You got to start thinking about what you put in your body, in your temple, to preserve that temple so you can be here for the generation and educate them and not off the scene and off the planet before your time. So how do we do this? We have to have, again, an athletic agenda that really looks at making sure that your diet is good, that you have a fitness plan and a fitness regimen, that you're working every day, and that you take care of your mental health. Self-care is very important and vital to the African-American community, because we know we're dealing with mental health issues, but we're also dealing with health disparities. And we're going to have to face those and come up with resources and strategies that are going to help us through that process. Next is C, right? Relevant cultural programs like this one that really help us look at how we're going to continue to navigate, right, through the cultural piece that give us the confidence that we need. And I always say chin up and chest out about what it is that we need to do to become the best people that we can be every day. And lastly is the comprehensive education, right, of learning all of these tools and more that give us what we need, right, equipping us with the strategies and techniques and tools to be able to do what we need to do to become better people each day, every day, one day at a time. Join us, the NAAEA. Go out and join us, become a member, www.naaea.info, I-N-F-O. Become a member. Peruse the website. See what you can do to join us and help us move this thing forward. And now, it's the Stan Macklin moment. We'll be right back.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Is absolutely right. It's time for the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with Brother George. Let's bring him in the right way. Come on, y'all, rock with me.
Oh, yeah.
Bring it. What?
I hear you.
We're not going anywhere.
Brother George, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, brother, and thank you. I appreciate that. How are you doing?
I'm doing well today. It's family day, so I got all my ones with me today, and I'm excited about that. So I'm just happy right now. It's a family fellowship and friendship day around the way. So we're doing good, and we got to our destination safely. So thank you for asking. And give us what we got to get today, brother, the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment.
All right. From the Nkuzi Saba, the principle of today is Ujamaa. Umoja, which is unity. To strive for and maintain unity in the family, community, race, and nation. Umoja. According to the traditional African perspective, every living thing comes from the same spiritual source, and therefore, everyone and everything is equally deserving of respect. When we have a realization that all life is one, we begin to open our hearts to others and we receive blessings in return. We can see that it is in our best interest to hold the best interest of all at heart. We understand that what we do to another, we do to ourselves. And so we are always careful in our relationship to respect all life. It's beautiful. For the Willie Lynch segment, I want to try to say something that's in line with what Brother Rick is going to talk about today. And I'm reading from a book, Introduction to Black Studies, by the same Brother Wikwan Malana Kerrang, Dr. Malana Kerrang. And I'm reading The Problem of Ghettoization. The black community, like other communities, is defined by its sharing of common space, experiences, view and value systems, social institutions, and self-consciousness. Its common space, however, is a bounded area of living, and especially a ghetto, which not only closes blacks into the community, but simultaneously shuts them out from the access and various opportunities available in the larger community. It was Wilson's, which they're talking about, Amos Wilson. It was Wilson's call, ghetto social isolation. Oh, he calls ghettoization social isolation, which is further aggravated now by middle class and working class out migration, strengthening the structures of constraint on inner city residents. In other words, the immigrants that's coming into this country is also doubling down on our opportunities being taken away. Even when blacks move beyond the original bounded areas and form what is called guided ghettos, in integrated areas, these outskirt communities also become linked to the central black area as whites leave and other blacks move in. Moreover, even outside the ghetto physically, blacks are defined and treated as the majority who are still in the ghetto with allowable variation. Benjamin argues forcefully that racism, both as an institution and individual expression, affects the lives of all African Americans regardless of class. She argues that even in the corporate world, there is a sense of ghettoization of black professional. I thought that was very interesting, that the way that that's summed up, because a lot of us know that even when we move away from the low income areas, we get a break and we move into a more middle class type environment, we're still treated the same way. It doesn't matter where we are in this country. We're still treated the same way. That's why we have to reestablish ourselves, you know, with a collective consciousness. And we have a T-shirt that kind of demonstrates that, that shows that we're all the same people, the Moors. There's an African group of people called Moors. And we migrated and traveled throughout the African continent, which was originally called Akebuland. And at that time, we had what you call a collective consciousness. Some would call it the 42 principles or laws of Maya. And we have to have a continuation of those collective consciousness type structure where we have the same principles, we have the same morals, and all of us are living by this standard that we recreate, because it's already been done, so it's a recreation of something that we've done in the past. Because here in America, we'll always be the outcast. And so we have to reestablish our world of what it is that we want our world to be, and we're going to have to do it through a collective consciousness. So, Brother Marvin, that's me for today. If you have a question of the week, I'm ready.
I like that, Brother George, and I'm glad you mentioned the Black Educational Prince Collective Consciousness Series. All right, go out to our website, www.naaea.info, and go to the product page, right? And you can see the shirts out there. They're beautiful. They tell you the different names that we're known by. And our educational prints are used as an educational tool for knowledge itself. And we have to understand how important that is as we continue to work on cultural enrichment and social and emotional learning for all of our people, not just our children. Want to be able to do that as an educational piece, but also as a fundraiser to be able to get the resource that we need to continue to create those realities that we see in our minds that are effective for our young people. So go out and support us for that. And now, thank you, Brother George, for that, for the AAEA Empowerment Question of the Week. Creating our own realities, right? How do we create our own opportunities, right? And how do we get unity in the family and the community? How do we get, long question, back to one love and one heart? What you got for me, Brother George?
Well, you know, I say this probably once every other week. It's going to have to start with our really young children. Because as Noe Muhammad, Brother Minister, student Brother Minister Noe Muhammad wrote a book. And he said that the mathematics of the brain. And what he said was whatever it is that's fed in the most is what's going to win. And so if it's a lot of violence, a lot of negativity, a lot of cursing, a lot of disrespect, then that's all that they have as a resource to draw from, are those negative things. And so what we have to do is we have to fill our young children's minds with positive thinking, with ingenuity, with accomplishment, with the desire to want to build and become something of value to the society. We have to put those things in our children. And when you put those things in, then you get out what you put in. And so that's my response, brother.
Brother George, you're right. And that's key and critical that we have to be able to get out exactly what we put in. And we must put in more effort. We're doing it. We're not just talking about it. So let's continue to do that work. We're working on ourselves and helping our kids and our communities get better. Thank you, Brother George, for your powerful presentation and your powerful words as we continue to do this work collectively together. Join us. www.naaea.info. Go out there, shirt, right? Put it on and wear it proudly as we continue to educate ourselves and know exactly who we are, because knowledge is power. Thank you, Brother George. Now, we got a great show coming up. We got Collective Intersectionality featuring Brother Rick Martin on standby. We're going over to Brother Booker in just a minute, where we'll learn how to be the one. And as we continue to do that work, we have to understand that that work is one day at a time. So here we go with the one with Brother Booker. Buckle up, y'all. He coming right now. Oh, yeah. Bring it.
Bring it. What?
Rock with me. Booker, welcome to the show. How are you being the one today?
Good, brother. How are you, my brother?
I'm good, good. As always, let me start by saying peace to all the brothers and sisters out there within the sound of my voice. And brother, we everything you've been talking about so far, we all talking about the one. And I'm just going to list the characteristics of the one right quick again. Number one is the one is honest with himself. Number two, the one loves himself. Number three, the one loves his people. And number four, the one believes in himself. Number five, the one believes in his people even if they don't believe in themselves. Number six, the one always stands for what he knows is right, even if he have to stand alone. Number seven, the one loves for his brother what he loves for himself. Number eight, the one is a great communicator and he knows how to listen. Number nine, the one is not afraid to die for what is right. And 10, the one would rather serve in heaven than to rule in hell. Now, Brother Marvin, you sent me some Slido comments from last week's show on the one, and I'm going to read a couple of them that we got. And the first three I'm going to read, they're all in the same vein. How will you go about implementing the concept of the one? The next one, Mr. Booker, what is your unification plan? And the next one says, how do you suggest we come together as a people with all of the individualism, dysfunction, and distractions that we have as a people? And the last one I'm going to read is, and begin with, why do you see us as niggers and not as our great selves covered in the challenges of racism and white supremacy? Brother did not do it to ourselves. Brother, we did not do it to ourselves. Let me define that word, nigger. The original Greek meaning of the word from the Greek is something dead. And as a people, we are mentally dead. In fact, Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches we are blind, deaf, and dumb. We are mentally dead as a people. So when they bestowed that label on us or that title on us, they knew what they were talking about. They knew they had killed us mentally. And the word that defines us mentally, when we're mentally dead, is nigger. So that's why we got that name and used that term to describe the condition that we're currently in. Someone that's mentally dead, and that's us. So the name was given to us by our masters. You are my niggas, because I know you are mentally dead, and you are mine. Okay? Now, what are we going to do about it? How are we going to implement this plan to be the one? Well, when I return from California next week, I'm going to be working on implementing a media campaign strategy promoting the one, be the one. And we've developed a shirt or a logo, be the one, that we're going to be putting on shirts. And we've now got access to a national promotional distribution plan where you'd be able to go almost on Amazon, like going on Amazon, put the shirt in your cart, order the shirts all over the country, is what we're going to be implementing within the next month. And then, in addition, when I launch the media campaign, I'm going to be doing a tape. I'm going to be doing video. We'll be going Facebook. We're going TikTok. We're going all of them. I'm going to get my young folk to help me with the social media because I ain't up on the social media like I should be. I'm up on public relations and so forth. But the new vehicles out there now to distribute things like social media, I got to get a little education on myself. So I'm going to work with my children and young folk to get to a position where we're going to launch that. And where as needed, I will be traveling and speaking on the one, where as needed, explaining the one, explaining the concept of bringing, and trying to get us to understand what being the one is all about. And if we can do that, in my humble opinion, we will become unified as a community. Because the next step, when we said being the one, we're going to go from being the one to I am the one. And then I am the one, we're going to go from I am the one to we are one. And that's the plan moving forward, brother. And I just wanted to share that and say look forward to it, because it is coming. Because as you say, we're working, and we have to do this, brother. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you, Brother Booker. Lovely work. Continue to work on being the one. It's a great, great concept, great idea. I support Brother Booker and being the one. So when it comes around, make sure that you become the one by getting the one T-shirt. Put it on your back and share the message with others. Thank you, Brother Booker. Great job.
Thank
you. All right, we're getting close to time for our, thank you, brother, our feature speaker today in our online classroom. We got Brother Rick Martin coming up. You know we got to bring him in, right? He's going to be talking about collective intersectionality in the African-American community, a great, great, great concept, and we're going to get to that right now. Oh, yeah, bring him in, right? Let's rock with him.
Come on, Brother Rick.
Bring it. What?
Right here. I like that.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah,
man. Yeah. Come on, Brother Rick.
What?
Welcome to the show. How are you?
Man, when I hear DMX, first thing comes to mind is my wife's playlist. Next thing comes to mind is 125th Street in Harlem. And him rolling down the block. Other things come to mind, too, that are not so nice, but thank you for playing that. Thank you for having me, brother.
Glad you're here. You got a wealth of information. Before we even get started into the collective intersectionality, you got to tell us about your trip.
Oh, man. Woo. So
drop the bomb.
Enough time. Well, am I coming in clear?
No.
I just want to make sure.
Very clear. Take off.
Very clear? Okay, good, good. Just from doing this the last time, it helps if every once in a while you say, like, mm-hmm, or yeah, so I know that you're still there when I get on the road. So in case it drops out and I'm just talking. All right?
Right ahead, brother. You got a whole lot to share. It's wide open. The classroom
okay,
door
right.
is open.
Okay, all right. Okay, all right. Yeah, well, I'm still mentally, spiritually, and in some ways physically, like on a deep quantum level way, still in ancient Kemet, right? For those that may not be aware, Kemet is the original name of this place that I was at for about 2 weeks, exactly. In Egypt, up and down the Nile, Giza Plateau. Yeah, I am still pretty much there. I'm still rocking and reeling from the experience. I went with the intention of it not being a vacation, but an educational experience. So I chose to go with a particular touring company, a group of people that I'd known for a long period of time. These are folks that I met on Facebook many years ago through a important documentary called Pyramid Codes. Within that documentary, there were several archaeologists and scholars that blew me away with information. One archaeologist in particular who was indigenous to the Giza Plateau, Aoyan Hakim, was prolific throughout the entire documentary. If you haven't seen it, I suggest you watch it. But he grew up there. He grew up swimming in the aquifers that are below the pyramids and the tombs. Aquifers are waterways that go underneath the structures. Right, and that's kind of the important stuff I can get to later. But yeah, he went away to school in Europe to study archaeology. He came back and he became one of the major, they call them wisdom keepers in the area. Over the years doing tours, he was able to amass a lot of information about what was really going on during the ancient old era of what we call Egypt. At this point, we're talking about ancient Kemet. So I don't want to go too deep without you having an opportunity to throw some questions and stuff in there, but going with that particular tour company gave me a dearth of information that I went for beyond the fact that, you know, that's our people on that continent of Africa where we are talking about, we say Egypt. Some people have the idea, oh, Egypt is the Middle East, wherever that is, but it's on the continent of Africa. So go ahead and chime in, brother.
Sorry, Brother Rick. I'm just thinking what you saw, right? If you can just describe as best you can the feeling that you got once you arrived and then once you got on the tour, some of the things that you saw and the feeling that you got from the experience of being in some of the places that you went to.
Great. Thank you. See, that bought me a time to take a little sip of coconut water. The feeling,
he's healthy, y'all.
Right, is the whole idea of feeling is what I would have to say is what the ancient Kemetic people operated in. They operated a sense of feeling of the community, vibrations. One of the important temples that we visited was called the Sound Hospital. It's a structure that if you really didn't know what it was for, because a lot of the regular tourists don't go there, you wouldn't give it much mind. But once it's explained to you that this section of doorways on this temple are cut in such a way that they create a resonance on the inside, and that out on the causeway of this temple, people would lay inside or on these block-like forms. Some of them had like square shape, and they would be made of crystalline material, right? This crystalline material, crystalline granite, creates piezoelectric frequencies inside of the actual cutouts. The priests would put their heads inside these precision cuts and be able to feel, right, the vibration of the people laying out on the platform. Blew me away. You're probably blown away right now. And they would intone or tone back out onto the people laying out. This was a healing process. Right? Mm. You don't hear about this stuff in history books. You don't hear about this stuff in ancient, what's the show, ancient history book, aliens, you don't get that. You get a little sense. You know, there's some stuff there, you got to eat the chicken and spit out the bones. But, and having the opportunity now to physically lay on those platforms, take turns with our 12 people, 20 of us, all of us really into like things like Reiki. We had astrology with us, a physicist.
Wow.
You know, really people into like the whole mystic thing, right? So we're taking turns laying on the platforms and toning inside the cutouts. And this is just one part of this sound healing temple. There's another area where the priests would go in, and there was three just cutout sections. And the middle one was for balance, then the left and right were for left brain, right brain. We stood in line and waited to go in for each other and do it. Because each and one of us that went in, the idea was go to the one that you feel most drawn to first. And people took their time. We had time on that. And everywhere we went, it was just extra time, 2 hours. It wasn't just, okay, you look at this and walking by. It's like we're spending time there. So that's just one, because you talked about feelings. That's just one of the temples, one of the places we got to go to get charged up. My whole idea was not so much, oh, I want proof of my black heritage, my African heritage, to see, you know, my images of things that look like me on the walls, which I did see. I knew that already. What I wanted to gain more of was, well, what did they know? And what were they doing? And how were they able to do the things that they did? What I found out is there's so much more to know. This, I couldn't get it all in 2 weeks. That's why there's people that go back several times and scholars that have like 73 visits and are doing, you know, excavations because there's still more information to be had. But just that in itself, amazing. And I haven't even gotten to the Great Pyramid yet to talk to you about that. Yeah.
Wow. And well, let me interrupt you.
This whole intersexuality thing. Oh, go ahead. Say it again.
Yeah, let me interrupt you because I need to do some housekeeping real quick. If you want to join in, 845-277-9250, 845-277-9250 is a call-in number. Slido is in effect today, slido.com, S-L-I-D-O.com. Put in the number 3616148, 3616148. Put that in and then slide in your comment if you want to do it that way. So you have options today, 845-277-9250. Join us, Brother Rick, Brother George, and myself. Brother Booker is hanging around as well. And we have a conversation about collective intersectionality while we're enjoying our history and our culture from Brother Rick. But I want to ask one more question before we get into the collective intersectional piece. What takeaways do you have in reference to your trip that we can use, right, that our people can use here to begin to put us on a path, maybe not to returning to that particular culture, but maybe, what can we do that you can see that you were there and say, oh, well, maybe we can do this? What are some things that you would suggest by going on the tour and involving yourself that we can implement here just off the bat, off the top, off the dome?
I like that question because it immediately brings to mind the disparities in the social structure that I saw there. It says that 60% of the population in Egypt is in poverty. So riding by in our air-conditioned, beautiful tour bus, we're seeing along the highway 10, 15 feet of litter lined up all along the roads. We're seeing kids, no shoes, dirt. But it's just really heartrending to see the poverty, right? To see the imbalance of those that have and those that do not, and how much more my money is worth to these people who are selling pieces of toilet paper, you know, that you need when you go inside some of the toilets places here around the tombs and the museums. So what did that create for them is a sense of camaraderie and unity to survive. I think that's something that we still have. We can cultivate more. You know, we're talking about, you know, what we need to do. If we can look at the need, right, on a more collective level than opposed to what I need for myself. A little bit. Random acts of kindness. It doesn't even have to be something grand where, you know, everybody sees I'm doing this. Just little things here and there on a collective basis. Something that we've always had. If we use the distress, like these people in Egypt who are living in poverty, but they still come together to make it, same way we did coming out of slavery. If we continue to do that, we're going to see growth. We're going to see the come up. We're going to see the rise up. That makes that's my answer for it.
Wow. We got a little delay here, but I'm here. Brother Rick, that was powerful, right? Acts of kindness, right? And if you notice, right, and you can go almost to any continent, right, there is the tie into keeping our people where they are is poverty, right? and education.
Mm-hmm.
As I think about our ancestors who came to this country, you know, they'll tell us where they didn't know how to read and write. And that's true. They didn't know how to read and write English. They were well-learned people.
Right.
Right? And so as right. I engage with the Maasai tribe this week, they have a great system for education, but it's not Eurocentric, right? And just because we have a different cultural system, I think we're going to have to get back to embracing some of our cultural roots to help us out of this problem. What do you think, Brother Rick?
So, say culture, for me, right, we're talking about ways and mores of a particular group of people that live in a certain area. And when you have blending of that, you have people who have, like, multicultural backgrounds, it doesn't go over so well to say, okay, this is going to be this strict cultural thing right here that we do, and this is going to be this other one. I'll take myself as a personal example. You know, that's why the topic was supposed to be around intersectionality. From my personal perspective, right, I have, and known for years, I carry a tribal card for the Natchez, Desto Cusco Natchez Indian tribe in South Carolina. I'll be going to the powwow again, April 26th. Something moves up a little bit this year. So there's a reconciliation with me and my African-American heritage. And if I go even deeper, I got some German in there. If I get 23andMe and Ancestry.com, and, you know, all that. So there's certain aspects that, yes, they work, of cultural stuff, like the principles of my eye. Let's go back to ancient Kemet.
Like,
right? The principles of
I like
my
that.
Heard the brothers talk about those, the 42 principles of my eye. They're the impetus for the Ten Commandments. For those that are not familiar, look up the 42 principles of my eye and compare them to the Ten Commandments, and you will see for yourself. That's like, oh, and you can, you'll know which one is older than the other one. Those are principles that we can say are cultural, that are ours, but pretty much universal. The good cultural nuances or things are things that are universal. I was there at the Maasai thing at Allegro. Yes. Wonderful. Love it. But some things I don't think would go over well right now, like having two wives. Right, that may not work too well, but what's going over here? I know I don't think my wife is going to go for it, just from a practical standpoint. And that's where I'm at. I'm going to pretty much come from my own personal perspective and just be, you know, pin toes down and deep chest up. This is how I feel about it. It may not can go along with the rest of the community, but that doesn't mean that, you know, your thing can't go on. We can all still kind of move in the same direction. Here's where I go with the intersexuality piece, right? The house is on fire. There's something going on. We're running away from it, right, initially, right? And we all running together. Are we going to look
right.
to the left and to the right and say, oh, you are Muslim. Oh, you Ansar Allah. Oh, you Pentecostal. Oh, you whatever. You tranny, you light skin, you dark skin, you don't have a PhD, you ain't even graduated yet, your English is wrong. You can't run with us. We all dealing with the same thing. You see where I'm going? So, well, this don't make no sense. Right? So,
true.
But we're moving away from the same thing. We got to move away together until we can get to a place where we can stop it. Because so like now we more push back, which has been the thing. I heard it mentioned about being able to read. A lot of the historical scholars, you mentioned Amos Wilson and some other ones, you know, I'm looking at my bookcase now, they talk about how when we first came out of slavery, it was very quickly that over half of our population became literate because education was so important. You can look that up. I think it was more than 50%. And it was not a long period of time. I want to say about a decade or something like that is what the measurement was taken. So you look at that and you look at the schools and things that we developed on our own before integration. You're seeing a mighty people come up. So that's why history is important in this intersectionality thing. Because if we don't know who we are, we don't know where we're going. We don't know where we've been. We don't know where we're going. And it's been an intentional bump on the head, wool over your eyes, bamboozle. It's been an intentional thing with an overlay of drugs put into our ghetto. We was talking about that earlier, into our communities to foster further mental illness.
True.
Yeah, the mental illness comes as simply as PTSS, going to Dr. Joy DeBrue now, post-traumatic slave syndrome. Everybody's affected. We already know that a lot of our people have mental illness. A lot that's not even diagnosed. Been brought up that way. I got to take a breath on that. A lot of us need to be in therapy, need to be on medication, but we self-medicate.
True.
With a lot of different things. A lot of us. Food, drugs, alcohol, yeah. Drugs, alcohol, yeah. But food, sex, shopping, talking about somebody else, anything that will get it off of me, get the focus off me, get me out of myself instead of dealing with what's really going on the inside. That requires some work sometimes. That requires a helping hand sometimes. That requires community and collective and my eye a lot of times. In recovery, we talk about having that person to hold the other end of the rope and help you go down deep into those things.
Come on,
that
brother.
Got pretty much put into you coming up in your development. So when you run into them, because you got to visit them again, you know, you got to see what's been going on with the child down there. You know, you got to, you know, look at that shadow self, that dark stuff. But if you know you got somebody on the other end that can pull you up, this is where therapists come in, or good close friends, or people who've been there where you've been. Your accountability partner, it kind of goes deep, you know, where you can find your help. But they can pull you back up.
True.
When it's like, oh, God, I did that. Oh, God, what was going on then, you know. And, you know, patch you up until you're ready to look at it again and again until it don't have the same effect no more. Because healing is a process. It's definitely a journey. I realized that when my trip to Kimmy, because it was a journey for everyone on the tour. We had aches and ailments and breakouts. My face got thick, swollen. Oh, cold was going round. And we knew automatically, like, oh, there's something going on here. The astrologist was like, yes, at this particular time period, we're dealing with wounds. Check out the wounds.
Wow.
And this is what we need to be addressing. Right? And, you know, that's deep stuff, particularly when we know that these ancient people, our people, were consulting astronomical movements in the sky for thousands of years, using that information to chart their day-to-day. The astrologers pointed out to us, not only were they doing back then, people of, you know, means, politicians, billionaires, millionaires, still do that today. They don't make any moves without consulting and doing, you know, the work. You see, what is the proper time? What's the best alignment to these things? Because all these things have an effect on us. Just like the moon has an effect on us and the tides and the coming in and out, full moons. When is more crimes done? Full moon. When are people more likely to go on full moon? That's just the moon. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to take into consideration. There's a lot of stuff to learn. But the information, it's not like the information is not there. We just have the opportunity, the willingness to read the way we used to read. We used to have to, there was a time when we could not read. They would kill us. If you catch your ass reading, excuse me, cursing. If you catch your ass cursing, reading, you're done. So, what do our people do coming out? This is where history is important. Coming out of enslavement, everybody's learning to read. Everybody's got to go to school. I'm getting ready to go to a funeral on Tuesday down in South Carolina for a matriarch of the family, Ruth Martin, who went to a two-room school back in the day. She's 93. She passed in 93. She lived a full life. She went on to become a professor at Harvard. She's got books out. She got textbook out. She's got her, one of the journals that are, I think her dad or her mom used to keep because they used to do sharecropping. She put it into a book form. And it's sharecropping from Jim Crow era stuff, right? So, yeah, reading is fundamental. It's essential, even though it's a different language, even though we know that that language is not our original language, but it's based on ours. I heard you talk about the Greeks. We have to throw the Romans in there, too, but they got their information from ancient Kemet. They are the ones that they came for the tech. We were talking about that the other day. Yeah. That's why history is important. History will have you believe that, yes, I'm a Greek. You know? Yeah. Look at history. Look where these so-called philosophers, if they really existed, there's information that leads to the idea that they just got information from ancient Kemet, took it back and copied it and said this is who wrote it. Yeah, it's worth studying. It's worth looking up for yourself because then you get a broader perspective on things. And for us and our children, I love when they kind of know about some of this stuff already and want to know more. Like the kids we brought to the Kwanzaa thing, shout out to Sister Maliday at 11. Some of those kids from Jackson Ward saw the arms and said, oh, I know what that is. You want to touch it. And, you know, you got them then. You can talk to them about this. And you could ask questions. So you know where this comes from. You know what it means. You know what it means. Right? And you get a chance to drop a little more. You know, plant some seeds, water some seeds. And that's what it's about. It's going to be each one teach one. Always. So the common community talk about, you know, war still going on. It ain't nothing stop. It ain't over until we win. And, you know, in warfare, you just expect some opposition. You expect, like, let's say, during Black Panther era, Black Liberation Army era, so the era that kind of like came to my, like, awakening, the 70s. What the great awakening was, they're beating our behind. There's police brutality everywhere. Kids are going to school without food. There's poverty everywhere. We have to come together and do something, and that's what the people did. So always it was the need that created the solution. It'd be cool if there was that need there. But that's how everything is created in life. And this is some of the deepest stuff that I got from my trip. You know, there's always a rising and a falling of civilizations, of consciousness, of your own awareness, of your own feelings. This is what's repeated over and over and over again in the world. That's a grand scheme, a grand presentation. But each story tells that story. Whether it's the raising and putting up of the jet pillar, 23 degrees, 23.5 degrees, which coincides with the axis of the Earth. And the Earth is moving on its axis, causing different upheavals over time, more than just one. I guess civilizations will end and civilizations will rise, just like our winds, like our life cycles. Deep, you know. On some level, this is like so mind-boggling, but it's really kind of simple. That's how it's been going.
You know, you brought something to mind.
And look, that pause, the pause,
we're talking about
that's on the wall. Go ahead, go ahead. That's what you said.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on something really briefly. You talked about reading, right? And you talked about astrology.
Mm-hmm.
And it brought me to Harriet Tubman. Right, Harriet Tubman couldn't read and write English, but she could read and write the stars and read and write a map to freedom, right? And and so it's innate, right, that she could read and write nature, right, and understanding the moisture on the tree that gives her a direction and the stars that lead her, the North Star, so to speak. And so that's another form of reading, right, but not necessarily – the reading that we get from, you know, this structure that we're in. That makes sense.
Right. It makes a lot of sense. It's the education. So what is education? Like, our education system here, created by the Rockefellers and them, was created for to create workers. The education system of the African continent, of the Kemetic people, was holistic. It wasn't you're getting a degree in this and that and this and that and this and that. No, everyone is taught everything. You're going to learn about nature in connection with the stars, the moon, and how the movement of the Nile connects directly with Sirius going up and down, because this is important to us. This is how we feed the people, because when that Nile River inundates thick silk and puts it onto the ground, oh, we're growing some wonderful stuff. Cabbages the size of a cow's head, in my mind. Cabbage like that at home. I'm digressing a little bit, but you get where I'm going with that. Is important to us. I
absolutely
had the opportunity, flying back from Kemet, to watch the entire Harriet movie on the plane. Because, you know, that's a long trip, right? So for you to say that, of course, you know, my melanin is a little tingling right now, because that's what melanin do. And it's deep for me, because I was a cast member in two scenes of that movie, right? They shot a lot right here in the Richmond area. One scene, in particular, the end scene, where the soldiers are standing there and she's talking to them, and this is the first time a woman, not a little black woman, leads troops on American soil. Yeah, that's pretty deep. So, and her line, you know, she delivers this line, how long are we going to let them, let the snake, you know, walk over us? Are we going to do about something about it? And we're supposed to scream back, yes, it's nighttime. Her back is to, like, this moat. It's like open section of water. It's tents in the back. And we're all lined up out there. It's kind of cold, too. We're in our authentic Union soldier gear, right? Black rifles. She delivers the line. We screamed out, yeah. It carried across the water. It was like, I was like transported back in time. So to watch that movie coming back from Africa for my trip, oh my goodness, I was sitting in my seat in tears. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, when you look at things over and you kind of see the depth of them, and, you know, some stuff reoccur. You know, you look for all the synchronicities. That's spirituality, right? You see how the universe, your God or whatever, you know, is just bringing all these seemingly coincidental things around to happen. It shakes you. You have to realize, okay, yes, I'm moving in a way of knowing without knowing, right? If that makes any sense for you. You know, it's like I'm not putting my finger on it. It's subtle energy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you can cultivate that. The more you cultivate that, the more you get the sense. You can teach that. You give that to your children so they can sense when they're in trouble or sense when they need to go ahead and just be bold and do what they need to do. Yeah. Good stuff.
That's true, brother. Well, we're just about at the top of the hour. So let's do our call again. 845-277-9250. We're talking about collectives and intersectionality with Brother Rick Martin here. He's giving it to us really good today. Lots and lots of cultural knowledge and awareness that you can kind of garner from this conversation. And also Slido is in effect, right? Go out there, slido.com, S-L-I-D-O.com. The number today is 3616148. Again, 36-16-14-8. We can hear from you. Again, we got Brother Rick Martin live here. He's just gotten back from Egypt on the tour, and we want to continue this dialogue. But I got a quick question. Let's do a definition, if you will, Brother Rick, before we go to Slido and to the lines. What would be a working definition of collectives and intersectionality in the African-American community?
And when I gave that as a subject topic, I added on there my personal perspective, right? So I'm putting that in on to this question, too. So this is not like the end-all, be-all definition. Other folks can come up with their own.
Hold on, wait. This is our show. We can make up our own words and say what we want to say. So if it's yours,
it's
ours. We doing it our way.
Yeah.
Right here. We ain't going nowhere.
Yes. So what comes to mind with the topic is, where are we intersecting with ourselves and other peoples in the betterment and the furtherment of our needs as a people, right? So that, for me, encompasses the Pentecostal church, the Catholic church, the Ansar Allah Muslims, the Hebrew Israelites, the Five Percenters, the Roman Catholic Church, the Hispanic community. I kind of cut off on the black community and religious communities. But then I want to go also into the trans community, the LGBTQ community. I want to look at who are these people that say that they are our allies, because the intersection is what happened with Harriet. Harriet was able to move because of these abolitionist folks that realized, you know what, I've got some black blood in me. You know what? What we're doing to these people ain't right. They want to do something about it. So there are those people. You got to watch them, yes. But just like you got to watch the people within our own community, too. Because we're all affected with this PTSS thing. So the intersection is simply that. Finding out where we can work together, where we can put ourselves on the side, because we're all running from the same fire. The house is falling down. Whatever it is we're getting away from. We don't have to look side by side and say, hey, you know, you can't run with me because you Catholic. You can't run with me because you Muslim. And on and on and on and on. Good question.
I like that. Let's jump on over to Slido real quick. See what you got here. Okay, so the first question is, how do we wake up from our mental death? Right, and exploring our ancient culture and ancient history, how do we wake this group up here to get back on track to our initial innate greatness? What are your thoughts, brother?
So, according to our people, the people, the ancient people, there is a cycle. And it's been called the Great Procession. Procession of the equinoxes, the yuga cycles, and it's estimated at about 26,000 years. That's when it's rounding the number up, right? That our wobble on the axis goes through all the constellations, and it takes that time. And through that time, we go through different stages of golden eras, bronze eras, silver eras, where our consciousness, where the civilization rises and falls. So, we have been coming into the age of Aquarius for a while now, and we see there is another raising of consciousness. There is young folks and old folks becoming aware of, you know what, some of this religious stuff that they've been telling us might not be right. I have a computer in my your phone, let me look at it. They mention Canada. They mention black people. They mention Egypt and Africa. Just little things have been waking people up. I've seen since the dawn of Facebook and social media, growing numbers of, let's just take the Christian church, for example. Not to just come down on anybody, but because it's happening in other religious areas. Young folks are coming in and asking questions. Pastor, what do you know about this? What do you know about that? I'm not even going to be specific. And so oftentimes the pastor is not equipped, particularly in the area of mental health, that we go with the intersectionality of our community and the need for mental health. Because you're going to get information sometimes, you're going to get issues that you're not equipped to deal with. Particularly pastor, preacher, man, if you have not been studying, you're going to need to send the people to professionals, people who work in the field. You can't tell someone, oh, you didn't pray enough. You didn't pray enough times, and this is why this is going on. And, you know. And then there's a big movement now with professionals talking about this, right? Well, you might want to have some of them on the air. I'll put you in touch with some of them. Psychologists, head psychologists, large schools are talking specifically to clergy about, okay, you're really doing damage to the community with what you're doing. And that's just that particular religion. A lot of other ways of thinking, right? Because when you talk about religion, you're talking about, okay, this is a thought process. Is that thought process doing harm, or is it doing good? If it's doing harm, then let's do some adjustments here, you know, and keep it moving. And that's just one area. There are other areas that we have to work with. But that's the intersection. Yeah, that I feel from a personal level, right, my personal perspective, is where a lot of need is at. Because I get to see from my perspective as a fitness professional that works in recovery circles, right? I work with men in a men's treatment facility. I work with women in a woman's treatment facility. I work with what we call special needs folk, men and women, in a drug treatment facility, inpatient, right, for years, and see them get better, see what works, see what, you know, cuts the light on, see them come back, see them die, right? Because if you're not taking care of the least of these, which you say, you know, is part of our community, you're not doing nothing, right? So we're only as strong as the weakest link. So, you know, we get into why are we seeing so much of this mental illness, PTSS? Why are we seeing so much of this self-medication, PTSS? Because these enslaved people, with not even a study done to see how this trauma, this the genetic trauma, affected this group of people for 400 more years.
Right.
Now, claiming victimhood, just that we realize this is the case. You have some mental illness things going on in your family. If you got people in your family that's got special needs, if you got people in your family that's on something, which is just by every fact, you know. You'll recognize real. You know, real talk, recognize real talk. That's a podcast that I have on Spotify, y'all. Don't look for it. Shameless plug right there.
All right. Well, we've got to figure out how to get that, so give us that plug as well. But I want to talk about quickly the what you're talking about is adaptive strategies and coping techniques, right, that we have created or manufactured just to adjust, right, to living in this culture. And I don't think we give that enough thought, right, about what we had to do in terms of adjusting to the experience being in America and being in this culture and being in a racist, right? And so
that's,
as we continue to look at...
Who talked about the maladaptive behavior? We got them.
And so we have to look at that, right? And you just mentioned not doing the research, right? There's some research out there, right? But I don't think it's in a position where we can use it strategically, right, to begin to implement things and at least do trials to see, like what you mentioned earlier, what works and what don't work. Let's go to the lines. We got Brother Lush on the line. 0148. Brother Lush, what you got for us today? Welcome to the show. You got a thought, comment for Brother Rick?
Yeah, good afternoon, and thank you so very much for taking my call, and good afternoon, Brother Rick. Two points that I'd like to make. One, with regards to giving praises and honors to the ancestors, Imhotep being that first world's multi-genius, and with regards to George G.M. James' Stolen Legacy, while you were talking, that book popped up into my head. Could you bring out more points that you experienced from the sound hospital, I thought you had heard you say, with regards to sound therapy, and what could be used here, like currently, to help us even within our own homes or places of where we are. So could you speak more on that sound therapy?
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Excellent question. The one of the other aspects for my trip was to take a meeting with Dr. Ibrahim Karim, author and creator of biogeometry science. This science incorporates these type of things like sound and actual glyphs that affect the electromagnetic field around us. I know this is kind of going kind of deep now, but this is what our people
are
feeling.
No, keep going. Keep going.
Sound is a frequency.
Go deep, brother.
Color is a frequency. Our body operates on frequency. You look at the eye of a root. Each piece on the eye represents a piece of our senses. From the fingers, the tongue, the taste, and all of that, right? So incorporating all of those into the healing modality is what our people did. On our trip, I wanted to talk to Dr. Karim. Didn't get a chance to do it, only when they were through the emails. So I can get a license to use some of his work in the field of mental health. He has glyphs and that's look like pieces of squiggly lines on a piece of paper that have been studied to affect people dealing with ADHD, anxiety, and depression, right? The studies have been done at several schools, and I don't know why I know about this is because I've been following what these people have been doing for some years, right?
Wow.
It's been important to read it.
Come on, Rick.
So my idea was to incorporate some of those glyphs into the fabric of athleisure wear. So August 24th, I've got this fashion show, athletic wear event happening with a lot of the area fitness folks that's been around for some years. I can call out Dow Ellis from DNA Fitness, Risha Allen from Raw FX, Maria's Body, some of them might even be on the line right now. This is happening to promote different ways of health. We already have, what's the sister name? Sacred Heart something, Sacred Symbols. I forget her name. She's pretty prolific in our area doing the sound bowl healing stuff. This stuff is important. It helps to calm us down. It helps to center us. It helps to down-regulate us because we're in this constant, get up, go to work, feed the children, clean the house, come back, get some rest,
yes.
Maybe get a drink, get up and do it all over again. Constant. Not doing anything for self-care. Eating whatever's there, you know, at the time, right? Making ourselves sicker and sicker and sicker without remedies. But our people have remedies. Sister Harriet knew. Certain, the touch of a tree, is it cool or is it hot? This is stuff that a lot of indigenous cultures know. And what will that do for me? Just from touching, just from seeing what's being presented, learning how to read nature. So, you know, some faiths would say, okay, this is that pagan stuff, you know, when we talk about learning from nature. But this is how mankind learned. Mankind learned from nature. That's why you see on the walls and on the papyrus depictions of sumorphic images, meaning maybe this is the head of an animal or this is an actual animal. Are they worshiping these animals? No. They're showing you the nature, the energy that is present, that is of the divine. This divine energy here is what we're calling for. It's what we're working with. So it's all levels. On the walls carry meanings seven levels deep. But go ahead. I heard somebody trying to say something.
Asante Sana, thank you so very much, brother, and all the very best to you, and hope to hear from you again on this program.
Thank you. I love this. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Brother Lush. Brother Ricky laying it down. 845-277-9250. Slido again is in effect. 3616-148-3616-148. We got Brother Rick Martin on the line. He's talking to us about collective and intersectionality along with his tour to our great ancient past, Kemet.
better known as Egypt. All right, mm-hmm. let's go back to Slido for a second. Can you? Here's the question. Can you help us get a tour to Egypt as an NAAEA initiative? All right, thank y'all. Brother Ricky, somebody's asking for a tour. Can you help pull that together?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could talk about maybe taking a small group over there who's interested in going and learning more
mm-hmm.
about. Oh, that brings us to another question. I want to learn more about ancient Egypt. All right, so we got somebody who wants to go on a tour. Uh-oh, here's another one. We need
mm-hmm.
to schedule a tour. Okay, so they're excited.
Okay.
All right. So
yeah.
I know you got some connects, and just put it out there, just some thoughts on
mm-hmm.
those Slido questions.
Yes, sir. Definitely, definitely. We can definitely make that happen. I definitely want to go back. There's so much to get, like
all
I
right.
said. You're not going to get it all at one time. But between now and then, get as much as you can because there is information available, lots of it. If you don't have time to do a lot of reading, listen to the documentary. The Pyramid Codes is a good start. It's a series, but then there's more.
All right, that'll work. Okay, let's go back to the lines. I'm going to see if I can pull Brother Hassan in here. I know he said he was traveling, but he's on the line. Let me see if I can get him in. Brother Hassan, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh wow, I'm doing wonderful. It's a pleasure being on the show today. I haven't had an opportunity to be a part of it. I've been traveling all over, been doing a lot of different things. But it's a pleasure to hear Brother Rick up there dropping it, man, and putting it down like it's supposed to be. Very happy that you're on the show today, brother.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate you.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
thank you,
so,
brother.
You know, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Can you? Yeah. You know,
yeah.
We were just talking about it, and I think that a big part of what we're talking about, I love the idea of us taking a trip to connect, right? What we know as modern day Egypt, and then you know just fulfilling the part of that part about repatriation and what it means for us to go back. You know, so I want you
True.
To, I want to know, like, how you feel about that? How you feel, man? How important is it that we reach back to the motherland, that we really, really, really get closer to our roots?
Great question.
Yeah, I like the question. I think it's really, really important. Like I said earlier, if you don't know where you come from, you don't know where you're going. You don't know where you've been. You don't know where you're going. The thing about the continent, right, particularly in light of Kemet, right, which gets a lot of, what's the word, a lot of ink. Let's say it like that, right? But the continent is responsible for Kemet being where it is and how it is. The development comes out of what we would call South Africa.
True.
Because you got to look at, you know, things look just like up north, right? Out of the Nubian area, right? These are the people that are responsible for building the pyramids. There are more pyramids in Nubia than anywhere, right? Like 200-something odd, more than on the regular Giza Plateau. The reign of the Nubian pharaohs. Pharaoh is not a wookie word that they use, but we use it just so everybody can understand. It's been depicted on the cover of what was it, People's Magazine. Several dynasties of black pharaohs. Right. It's important for us to know these things because you'll have other nations, right? 50-odd nations on the continent of Africa. The largest, like, land mass where other countries can fit into, you know, if you look at a map. It's so important that I think our self-esteem for our youth and ourselves right now is tied up in it. Because we're
yes.
being told, this is just how I got it, at least, we're being told that, okay, we took y'all from over there, we brought y'all here, enslaved y'all.
y'all was enslaved for a long time. Then we decided to let y'all go. Then there was Harriet Tubman, Martin Luther King, and them, and now we cool. I don't think so. There's a history before enslavement, and it's not really available. And I think that's what affects particularly our youth, who find it okay to walk around with their butt hanging out totally. You know what I mean? I'm laughing, but you know, that's another one of those maladaptive defense mechanisms, laugh in the face of, you know, something that's really kind of like tragic. Yeah, we might not be so inclined to know that, you know, if they were raised to know that they're regal. They come from a people that created language, science, math. I heard someone, you know, mention Imhotep. You know, all of that stuff originates there. We trace it back. You know, the information is there. So you can't get around that. But all of us don't know that. Oh, some of us think ancient history is Jerusalem. That's it. Mm. We go back further than that. You know? So, yeah. Good question.
Right.
Thank you.
All right, Brother Hassan, you got anything else?
No, I mean, that's wonderful right there, man. That's a beautiful elaboration upon that, and I think it's important that, you know, I know Dr. Amoson Wilson said that, you know, you can't forget your past. You know, you can't forget your history because you bring your past with you. So when people say, oh, man, that's in the past, like, you can't forget what's in your past because your past is what made you as you are today. And so if you if you leave everything in the past, you wouldn't be able to speak right now. You wouldn't be able to talk right now. So our past is indicative of our future. I believe that they're synonymous with spiritual people as we are, right? Past, present, and future. They all one and the same. So we have to bring that with us, and we have to most definitely get in touch with our past. So I appreciate y'all having this dialogue today. It's a wonderful.
Absolutely. Yep. Thank you, Brother Hassan.
We know,
and we got to get you.
We have been somewhere.
Go ahead, Brother Rick.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say before we let Brother Hassan go, we got to get you back on the show. And thank you for your reaching out for comments today while you travel. Thank you, brother. Travel safely. Peace and blessings.
Yes, appreciate that so much. Love you, brother. Love everybody.
Love you too, brother.
Peace. I like that, brother. Thank you, Brother Rick, Brother Hassan. Yeah. All right. So we got just a few more minutes left. What are your thoughts on Brother Hassan's comments, Brother Rick?
Yeah, the history thing, I mean, it grabbed me, right? History, right? Yeah. His story, right? The what does Dr. Ray Hagen say? You know, the ruler of the age, you know, gets to dictate what's going on the page. It becomes his story. The conqueror is not going to put out there how great the people are that he conquered and constantly remind them of that. He'd be a fool to do that. They're going to do whatever they can to keep that on the low. And history shows that. The study of Egyptology shows that there was white supremacist, racist things done and said and continue to be done and said in an effort to keep out of the limelight that this is Africa, this is African people, this is African heritage, right? And why? Because if it's the other way around, these people now have a sense of dignity and can claim reparations and can claim retribution and can do a whole lot of things because now they have something to rally around because they all know. But see, everybody doesn't know right now. Some people know and don't want to do anything about it. Some people know and want to keep it hush. Some people know and are in high positions and want to keep it hush. But this is the stuff that's going to raise our self-esteem. Maybe we won't see a big change in our lifetime. But as the ball keeps rolling, as we keep on going through this cycle of enlightenment, because it is happening, we're going to see it. You're going to see the youth not so inclined to be doing what Grandma and them was doing, eating the way Grandma was eating. Yeah, not, you know, frowning on them. Just that's stuff we didn't know because we were bumped on the head, hoodwinked, bamboozled. You know the whole line, Malcolm X. But now we're waking up, and it's a good waking, coming out of a sleep. As Brother Kava Kamini said that the event we did back in 2014, this is the awakening of the giant. We're a giant. We're mighty people. I have one thing to add on.
All right.
We were talking about your peace thing. I would put economics as the first thing before politics, just going in accordance with Dr. Claude Anderson, Power Economics, because once you have the economic group, collective economics thing happening, you can actually buy your way into politics, and then you can fall shy. So he explains that very well in his book. That's heavy stuff. So
all right.
I want to put that out there.
I concur.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get the piece out of order, then you spell it something else. But I got you. All right, let's hear from Brother George really quickly.
Yeah.
Brother George, you got a comment as we begin to wind down?
Yes, sir. You still got me?
Right here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wanted to comment on some of the animal heads that were on the body. Because what that came from was our people researching nature. Now, for example, that head that looks like a wolf or a dog, that's a jackal. And the jackal is known for its precise timing. And what I mean by that is the jackal has a funny digestive system. It can't eat meat that it kills immediately. The meat has to rot for a certain period of time, so the jackal will bury it and then dig it up and check and see if it has rotted to the appropriate time. And then its system can digest it. And through our people studying nature, they realized that the animal had something to do with precise timing. And so that's why it's there. I just wanted to give an example of why the animal heads and an example of one and what it means.
George,
that's good.
Let's now move on for final comments from Brother Rick on a wonderful show this week as we learn more about collective and intersectionality, but also about our ancient past. What you got for us, brother?
So I'm going to close with this, seeing that we did touch on that there is a need for some mental healing. You know, this whole idea of getting your healing, sound healing, you know, better ways of coping, better ways of adapting to the situation. You know, when you have captive people who've been captive for some time and have forgotten some stuff. Forgotten that they were even captive, maybe even operating in the kidnap syndrome thing. You got a delicate balance here. You got people that are really, really in need, and it's a sensitive thing, and it's an urgency to it. So if you have information, I think it behooves you to give it, to give love, to give understanding where it's needed, to know that if somebody is hurting you, saying something really bad or things like that, take a moment and see where it's coming from. Because hurt people hurt people. What's going on with them? They're working in a corporate environment where they get me every day. They may not have the outlets that you have or the understanding that you have. You know, they're letting it out. And you take it for a second, and so that person technically is, you know, big deal. They're hurting. Like anybody else that you would hurt along the wayside on your journey. Random act of kindness, just by listening, just by taking it, maybe coming back at a future date and fixing it. But, you know, the needs are there. You know, there's a scripture that says, the labor is plentiful. The working a few. Because it takes something for a bee to be a workman. It was a warriorship. It would have been, let me put myself on the back burner and do this for the collective. Let me take one for the team. I hope that inspires somebody. I'd rather say inspires and motivate, a drawing forward. Motivation is like a pushing. I want to be drawn to this information because it feels right. I'm attracted to it. That's how personal training kind of works, too. Anything that you're really trying to get, what are you drawn to? Yeah, so I'll end with that.
Thank you, Brother Rick, for your time. Thank you, Brother, for your powerful, powerful words today. And as we wrap up on this Saturday, I just want to end with this. I mean, it's all been said. Get your healing. Get your healing. Thank you, Brother Rick. Thank you, Brother George. Hassan, Brother
Thank
Booker,
you, bro.
And yes. So many others who are listening today. Go out and get your healing today. Thank you, Brother Rick. Peace and blessings, and we'll see y'all next week on African American Empowerment Saturday. Peace and blessings.
All right. Peace and blessings. All right.
All right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.